This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S.
Hey, Thanks for Sharing listeners. This episode that you're about to listen to is the first in a new project we've got going on, the Hidden Trauma Crash Course. And this one is about, this particular set is adult children in the workplace.
Yeah.
And business, and how that relates to business and work issues. So give it a listen. We hope you enjoy it.
This is the Hidden Trauma Crash Course with Jackie Pack and John Taylor. In this episode, we're going to look at why some people or some teams are really difficult to manage, despite all the know-how you might have of how teams work together.
Right.
And to understand this concept, you need to know what adult child means, what that phrase means.
Yes, because adult children are everywhere, including the workplace.
Yes, and in far greater numbers than you might think. And you're probably listening to this and thinking like, oh, those adult children.
Right.
What I would encourage you to listen to as we talk about this, look at how this reflects for you,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to have some adult child traits too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think whether you're a manager, whether you're a CEO, you're going to be able to help the adult child in your workplace if you recognize your own adult mm-hmm. child issues mm-hmm. and come from that place of understanding.
Yeah, so we've said that term about 7 times now. Let's define it.
Okay.
So an adult child is someone who takes the coping strategies they had in childhood
mm-hmm.
and they take those into their adult relationships.
Right. They have not learned, or their adult strategies have not aged as they have chronologically aged.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that they're childish.
Yeah.
But in the ways that they deal with conflict, in the ways mm-hmm. that they deal with feedback, in the ways that they deal with pressure,
mm-hmm.
They have these skills that didn't continue to develop. And so their skills are childlike.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think those skills, those adult skills, like so many things in our society, I think we assume that people are just going to get these
mm-hmm.
as they grow up. And we assume that we just got them
like
as we
grew up.
Like
they're gifts that we just get on our birthday.
Right, right. And I think the truth is nobody becomes a fully formed adult without having to work on it.
Right.
And at least working on some aspects. So you may get these people. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to add, and maybe you were lucky and your parent was an adult.
Uh-huh.
But for many of us, our parents were adult children.
Yeah.
And so, again, where were we going to get these skills? How were they going to be developed for us? Which is why it's so important for us to recognize that really becoming a fully formed adult requires work and
yeah.
not just aging.
Yeah. And so you may see, like, this concept of the adult child at work, it's not like this person can't handle anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a reason why you hired these people. They probably presented very well in an mm-hmm. interview. They may have been very responsible, very articulate. You may have felt like they had a really good grasp on what mm-hmm. you need them to have a grasp on. So it's not like adult children are in complete chaos in every
right.
area of their life. Like
right.
you can get some that they can handle money like nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
They can show up on time. They can keep themselves clean. They can, you know, they
right.
can do a lot of things adults do, but maybe when it comes to giving them feedback on their performance or giving them feedback on what needs to happen in a project or in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
they can't tolerate that.
Yeah.
They don't know how to take feedback.
Right. Or maybe they were a really great employee and they climbed the ranks very well, but in management and upper management, they hit this level in which you're scratching your head wondering, why did we keep promoting them?
Yeah.
Because what we saw as they climbed the ladder is not what we see in this position of management.
Yeah. Yeah, so to make some sense of that dynamic, I think it's important to realize that everybody brings their family dynamics to work.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one of those things. We all like to think that we have a professional life and a personal life.
Right.
That's a nice fantasy.
Uh-huh.
That's just not how it works.
Right.
So these adult children and everybody in your workplace, whether they're an adult child or not, they're bringing some element of their family of origin and those interactions to these relationships.
Particularly teams in which there's some type of hierarchical structure,
which
most workplaces have that because that's how they function. And so workplaces are particularly vulnerable for these family dynamics to be acted out and to be recreated.
And the reason why that happens is because we all learn relationships from our family. Like, that's our basic template for it.
Right.
I would say that's our default setting. And I think it's possible to learn different ways of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're not conscious of that or cognizant of that, we're going to go back to our default setting.
Right.
And so you'll see this, just the mix of people that you have that work in your business, they're going to bring different elements of themselves. And sometimes they may be very aware of it. Like you may have people who say, feedback's hard for me, but I'm working on that. So I'm going to work on listening, or it helps if you email it first and then we talk about it later. You may have people that are aware enough to do that. And then you may have other people, like these adult children, who don't even have awareness that they're not good at this.
Right.
They may think they're a fantastic listener until you're trying to get them to listen.
And one of the things that I hear occasionally as I do consultation with varying businesses when they hire us to come in and consult with them, they like to think that somehow their employees can leave that at the door.
Yeah.
You know, and I've sat in meetings before where literally the HR person or the CEO person gives some type of example or instruction to the employees that says, you know, when you walk in the door that employees walk in, you park your car, as you're walking in, notice there's a trash can right there.
Throw it all away.
And you need to deposit all of that in the trash can on your way in, and it'll be there when you leave and you can pick it back up. And I have had people, you know, in this process of deciding whether or not we're a good fit to come in and do some consultation with them, say, can you help my employees do that? And often they are saying, I don't want what happens outside of the workplace to come into the workplace.
Yeah.
And the reality is that just isn't possible.
Yeah.
Your employee is a human being who doesn't just compartmentalize so well. And for the adult children who do compartmentalize very well, that's also reckless in the workplace.
Like they compartmentalize it and they constrict it so much that it starts oozing out in other places. It starts coming out sideways.
And they forget how to be relational with maybe the people they're supervising or managing.
Yeah.
They forget how to work, you know, maybe they're the supervisor of a certain team and they work very competitively with another team, which hurts the business.
Yeah.
Rather than working relationally with that team, they're working competitively.
Yeah. So when you were talking about that, leave it in the trash can and pick it up when you leave, if that's possible or something like that's possible, I think it's a very advanced skill.
Right.
To be able to roll and de-roll. And so I think that's important to recognize. While that might be the ideal we're going for in the workplace, you're certainly not going to take just anybody and say, well, this is what you need to do, so just make your brain do that.
Right.
You really have to work through that. And hopefully that's something through these this series of podcasts, we can give you an idea of what that looks like. And then also in the consultation work that we do, we can really dive in with your organization and
because we aren't expecting or suggesting even that work relationships become therapeutic in nature and that people are working out their therapy issues at work.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes that's what business owners and business managers are afraid is going to happen. If we start talking about this, then everything comes in and we don't know how to manage that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly not what we're looking for.
No, there's a place for therapy and it's not at work.
Just some basic competencies around navigating some of these things. And we'll,
we'll
talk in some later episodes around kind of how workplace and hierarchies are structured and structures that tend to pop out more adult child traits and structures that tend to absorb and handle adult child traits a lot better. So let's look specifically kind of at how those adult child traits may show up at work. And usually the way that we start looking at this is we start looking at common family roles that we see. A family is like a troupe of actors, and everybody has their part that they play.
Mm-hmm.
And usually these parts that people play in the family, they're pretty set.
It's hard to move.
It's really hard to move into different roles in the family. And because everybody brings their family and their relationship expectations from family into the workplace, these roles show up at the workplace too.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go through and we're going to talk about, you know, there's 5 or 6 different roles we're going to talk about. So we'll explain how that looks in the family, and then we'll explain how that shows up at work.
Okay, so where do we start?
Let's start with everybody's favorite, the hero, the golden child.
And one of the reasons that this one is so hard to change is because the hero doesn't want to let go of it.
Right.
So maybe you're in a role that you're like, I'd rather be the hero, but that seat's got somebody sitting in it, and they're not willing to move.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, you know, because I think the common misperception is, isn't the hero great at the workplace?
Yeah.
And there are some pros to having the hero in the workplace, but there's some cons that we may not see, and we may not see that it's coming from the hero.
Uh-huh.
So we're thinking, well, they're not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the team may be feeling that they are the problem.
What I need is more heroes, and we'd be fine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so in the family constellation, the hero or the golden child is the person that can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually, I would say, legitimately competent in a lot of things.
Yes, very competent in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
Because that's how they survive in that role, and that's how they get their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the other thing, and again, we're talking about dysfunctional families that these roles occur.
Yep.
You know, in functional families, everybody gets to be their hero in their own way.
Yeah.
And everybody gets to be incompetent in their own way. And everybody gets to be their own individual. And we don't have, you know, certain people filling parts. Everybody gets to fill the parts of who they are in functional families.
Yeah, there's a lot more fluidity
in
functional families.
Yeah.
So when a hero comes in for an interview, you're going to see someone who can probably talk as technically as any textbook written on whatever you do.
Right.
They're going to have the knowledge. They'll probably have some impressive experience.
Yeah.
They're also going to be the ones that I think you'll tend to see they rise meteorically within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, really well liked.
Mm-hmm.
Until that hero facade starts to crumble, because nobody's that kind of superhuman.
Right. So until it becomes, you know, too much that they have to be the hero all times in all ways, or that somebody else in a different capacity starts showing up and being successful,
mm-hmm.
too, then you'll start to see some shifting for that hero, mm-hmm. and they're now it becomes very competitive.
Yeah.
Not in a way that builds and helps the whole company, but in a way that I'm going to passive aggressively or maybe very overtly take out somebody who's competing with me.
It really divides and undercuts. I think also the heroes run the risk of carrying a lot of resentment.
Mm-hmm.
In the family, that kid was a hero because they were the saving grace for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look at that sentence, so a child whose responsibility it is to save the family,
mm-hmm.
that's an impossible task.
Right.
Because it's actually the parent's job,
mm-hmm.
to save the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think heroes tend to take on responsibility that they really have no authority for, or they tend to take on things that they may not have the power to actually see it through, but they're
mm-hmm.
going to try to be a driving force for that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll be successful at that.
Right.
But like you had mentioned earlier, Jackie, with the hierarchical structure that's in most companies, there's going to be walls that the hero's going to run into. And they're going to internalize a lot of that frustration. They're going to start getting resentful
uh-huh.
about all of the things that they do that they don't get recognition
right.
for.
Well, and this is also, you know, many of the heroes end up being the CEO, the CFO, the BDO, whatever that is. They end up in those really high-level executive positions, and yet they don't really know how to be part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the family of origin, their goal was to save the family.
Yeah.
And all of that was on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't work as a unit to do that. They had to work as an individual. So, and we'll talk about this in later episodes as well, they have huge health risks that come along with that, right? Yeah. They may be very productive in their workaholism, but to the extent that their personal life and possibly their physical health is compromised.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the hero. Anything else we want to say on the hero?
I don't think so at this point.
Okay. Just like in families and physics, forces are equal and opposite. So on the other side of the hero is the scapegoat.
Uh-huh. Or the black sheep.
Yeah, yeah. This is the person who everybody agrees does not fit.
Mm-hmm.
This is the person who everybody agrees messes up most often.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a problem, we can usually trace it back to that yes. scapegoat or that black sheep. Now, there's a confirmation bias in that. And I saw this like in my own family growing up.
Uh-huh.
My older brother was the scapegoat, the black sheep.
And
we all knew that. And I don't remember when we all quote unquote agreed to that.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of how I remember it was. And so if there was a problem, we could always trace it back to him because we had that bias up.
Right. Right.
We could always look at what he didn't do or what he did do that made it so hard for everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And so the scapegoat serves the function in the family to hold the family shame.
Right.
We're all innocent. This is the
problem. To hold the family dysfunction.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I point out when I'm doing business consulting is just like in healthy family systems, healthy families don't have a scapegoat. They don't have a black sheep.
They don't have a hero either.
Right.
Yeah.
And healthy organizations also do not have a black sheep. They don't have the stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Healthy organizations own problems and successes together.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a need for a certain individual or a certain department to be scapegoated.
Yeah. And I think over time what happens to the scapegoat is they actually start to embrace that role and mm-hmm. they can become antagonistic.
Yes.
Or,
and they will self-sabotage
mm-hmm.
and sabotage the success of the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which again fits into everybody's expectation of that.
Right.
So it's this function in the dysfunction. We have predictability,
uh-huh.
but it's the kind of predictability that says Joe is always going to drop the ball.
Right.
And Joe more often than not drops the ball
mm-hmm.
because he in that dysfunctional system, Joe plays a vital role in being the dysfunctional one.
Right.
I
mean. In that example, Joe reminds the family or Joe reminds the company that we are not invulnerable,
mm-hmm.
that we are not perfect, that we're not human,
yeah.
right? And so that is part of the role of the scapegoat is to remind the family or to remind the business that there could be problems. We're not invincible.
Yeah.
Which is important, I think, for any organization to recognize. Because if we don't recognize the invincibility, we don't prepare for it, we mm-hmm. don't watch it, and then all of a sudden we fall mm-hmm. right off the cliff.
You know, that brings up for me kind of a financial parallel here. Your company's liquid assets or your company's capital, you don't put that all in one place.
Right.
You really diversify that. So when we look at these dysfunctional roles, we're actually like going against that wisdom that says we locate all the good traits in the hero, we locate mm-hmm. all the bad traits in the scapegoat. And so the organization as a whole being able to say, here's my weak points, or here's what I don't do well, or here's what doesn't work well for me, which is that actually I think is less of a liability to have everybody recognizing mm-hmm. the role that they play than it is to say it's just this one person. Because once we say this one person's the problem, everybody else is off the hook for examining what they contribute to that.
Exactly. And now we don't have a team.
Mm-hmm.
We have those compartments fighting, competing mm-hmm. against each other.
Mm-hmm. And I think in some extreme cases, it's easy to justify getting rid of the black sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Often part of the role that the black sheep will embrace, they'll be a truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they'll tell us like, here's the difficult feedback that nobody else wants to say. Everybody hates me for saying it, but we actually value what that person is saying.
Right.
Or they have that skill set, or they have that perspective or that know-how where they are indispensable, but the slot that's been created for them and the slot that they have taken up is something that the business can actually do without.
Right. Well, and again, I think when you say sometimes it is helpful to dismiss and get rid of this scapegoat, that is if we recognize as a company the compartments that we've gotten into and the roles that people have played, and we have worked to get Joe into the team, mm-hmm. and we've worked to acknowledge to Joe that his voice is an important voice,
mm-hmm.
and Joe still just wants to kind of say F you all, and Joe won't change with the system, right, then we may have an individual problem that we can't work with, because we have worked systemically
mm-hmm.
to change our organization, but this person won't work with us. So oftentimes you might lose some people in the process because they are so wedded to these roles that when the need for the role evaporates, they're still playing the role. But to just say we're going to get rid of the black sheep,
it's not going to solve the problem.
Right, and then our system will get better. That doesn't happen unless you have changed the system.
And as long as the system is sick, somebody else is going to be that black sheep. Let's move on to talk about the people pleaser.
Okay.
I think this is a really, I'm going to say it's a good balance. It's the natural balance to mm-hmm. the hero and the black sheep.
Mm-hmm.
You have that person who makes peace between the parties. So what does that look like in the family of origin for you, Jackie?
Well, I think one of the things that we don't recognize is how much power there is in that position of people pleaser, because it looks like they're just so dang nice.
Uh-huh.
When in reality, they hold so much power.
This is actually, when we work on this dynamic with the businesses we consult with, we call this the God chair.
Yes.
Because the people pleaser is usually a person who, whether they say it or not, or people realize it or not, this person is acting like they know all, see all, and can do mm-hmm. all.
But the other thing is, you know, they also may be the, we call them the people pleaser, and sometimes they're the nurturers, right? They take care of and they smooth over the conflict. But they also need that conflict, because mm-hmm. if there's not conflict, if there's not somebody to rescue, what do they do, right? And so they also at times can create some of the conflict mm-hmm. in order to step in and rescue.
You know, and you see this with, take it outside family roles, you see this in companies where there needs to be some pruning or there needs to be some downsizing. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to justify their position.
Yeah.
I think that's something the people pleaser is constantly doing, needing to justify their mm-hmm. position, whether there's an actual conflict or not.
Right.
So that people pleaser, you know, both in families and in the business place, they're actually very conflict avoidant.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're resolving it, is because they don't tolerate that well.
Right. And they buffer everybody else from developing those skills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't have the skills either.
Yeah.
But because they want to avoid conflict, we don't know how to actually manage conflict, which is inevitable when you get groups of people together. There's going to be conflict.
So mostly what we see the people pleaser doing is they're distracting and diverting
mm-hmm.
from the real issues. And they're doing it effectively enough that it doesn't necessarily feel like this sharp right turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may be really good at putting a Band-Aid on it or mm-hmm. putting a fresh coat of paint on it.
They keep it from exploding.
Yeah.
But they don't really do anything productive with it.
Yeah.
And again, this may be the person who knows everybody in the office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know what they did on the weekend. They know when it's their birthday. They know what's going on if somebody got married in their family. They're in touch with all of that. And sometimes to the extent that they're not as productive at work.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody doesn't see that because they're such a nice person and they always check in on me and I feel mm-hmm. good.
Yeah, that's a big thing that we'll start working on systematically with companies and the individuals in them who are the people pleasers. They really need to work on that mindset that they have objectives during the day
mm-hmm.
and they need to stick to the objectives and not get caught up in crisis of the day.
Right. So they may be working on a task and then they're at the water cooler talking to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're back at the task
mm-hmm.
and then they've got to go check on so-and-so who wasn't mm-hmm. at the water cooler earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we find that while they're doing a lot of work, they're not actually making progress on the work that they're supposed to be doing.
Well, and that dynamic of back and forth between the water cooler, back and forth between the break room, that is really an anxiety management thing.
Yes.
Because when they're in their space working on their thing, they're disconnected from what's happening with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And when they don't know where every player on the board is,
mm-hmm.
that's really anxiety provoking for them. And that comes from
yes.
the family of origin.
And that also pulls back the curtain, and we start to see behind this person, like you were saying, is a lot of anxiety
mm-hmm.
and a lot of insecurity
mm-hmm.
that they can't trust themselves to go into a work zone and really work on a task, and that they have the capacity and the competency to do what is needed.
Yeah.
So they've got to get all of these people supporting them and kind of anchoring them up.
Yeah. All of these different roles have a different form of control. I think the people pleaser is the hardest kind of control to see and to
mm-hmm.
root out.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, if I were to rank the most controlling, I'd say the people pleaser is really the most controlling person
mm-hmm.
in that scenario.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the lost child.
Okay. So I would describe this one as, this is the one who really has a lot of potential but has no idea. They may be the underachiever.
Mm-hmm.
They may be the under-earner. As an employer, you may be saying, I see their potential, but I cannot get them to see it.
Yep.
And I have to, you know, they just kind of wander through the workplace, and sometimes people forget they're even there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as we look at where that lost child comes from in the family, this is somebody whose nervous system is so overwhelmed by the chaos
mm-hmm.
that they stop fighting or flying from the chaos
mm-hmm.
and they just freeze.
Yes.
They go into this, I fly just enough under the radar that I'm not noticed. I don't make that big of a difference, although, you know, you need them to.
Right.
They kind of go into that deflect and protect mode. And their way of coping with the conflict is to stay out of it completely.
Right. This will also be the employee that, you know, maybe year after year at end of year reviews, you're setting goals, you're checking in with them, and they're not really meeting those goals.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, you as an employer, you as their managing supervisor, may feel some responsibility for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't let them go, because what would happen to their spouse, or what would happen to their
yeah.
family, or what would happen to them?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't let them go, but you can't get them going either.
Well, and part of how the lost child stays invisible, when you have these performance reviews and you address these problems, they're going to talk like it's going to be solved tomorrow.
Right.
They
just didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see this dynamic where you talk, and then like 3 months later, a month later, maybe even, you know, if they're really good at being lost, by the next performance review, you're going to say, wait a minute, like none of this was
mm-hmm.
actually addressed.
Or if you look at the last 3 years worth of performance reviews, you realize that the goals are all the same.
Yeah.
And just you thought that we hadn't addressed this before.
Mm-hmm. And I think most of the time, like when an employer looks at that or a manager looks at that, they say this person's lazy and unmotivated.
Mm-hmm.
Those might be some of the symptoms. But at the heart of that, again, you got to remember, unless it was just you needed a warm seat in the body
mm-hmm.
or a warm body in the seat, there's a reason why you hired this person.
Right.
And there's a reason why you wanted their skills or their abilities or their experience where you're at.
Uh-huh.
And so that's with, again, with all of these roles, it's important to recognize, like, you can't just cut it loose because it's there.
Right.
Because somebody else is going to fill that.
Yep.
This is a systemic problem.
Yes, because the balance in these types of dysfunctional systems is created in having a seat or a person in every seat of
mm-hmm.
these roles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so if you get rid of one person, somebody else is going to have to take that seat.
Yeah.
Whether you hire them in or it's within your company, somebody's going to take that seat because the system wants balance.
Yeah.
And that's how dysfunctional systems are balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the last role.
Okay.
The last role is the mascot.
Mm.
We had done some consulting on a very specific employee, one
mm-hmm.
single employee, who I think is the poster child for mascot
mm.
in the work.
Mm-hmm.
in the workplace. So this person is, they're usually gregarious, they're usually outgoing. They're the person that you want to have at the office Christmas party because right. they keep the energy up.
Well, they'll plan the party.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, you're forgetting that they're planning the party. And
sometimes with this mascot, you have to remind them every day at work is not a party.
Right.
So in the family, the mascot comes from, usually we see mascots towards the end of the line mm-hmm. with siblings. And this is the person that everybody perpetually sees as the little brother or the little sister.
Mm-hmm.
They never quite become adults. They're never seen as adults in the family. They're never taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way they get recognition in the family is to be that cute, cuddly, fun thing that everybody right. loves to have around.
They're the entertainment. They're the pleasure. This is what makes the family system play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when we see that in the workplace, this is somebody who you may initially really love their personality, mm-hmm. but they're not going to perform mm-hmm. what you hired them to do unless you hired them to be a party planner.
Right.
But
I would say if you hired them to be a party planner, watch your budget.
Right.
Because they will not be watching the budget. They
right.
will be making the party bigger and better than anything you've seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be impressed by it every
mm-hmm.
time. But you don't recognize what's leaking out, not just the bottom line, but energy-wise,
mm-hmm.
what's leaking out around this person.
Yes. And you will also get other people who are very frustrated with this person
mm-hmm.
because they're not working.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody else is having to pick up.
Uh-huh.
Or they are exceeding their spending budget, and so everybody else is having to tighten the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, people start resenting the mascot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those things that the family or the workplace puts needs on this mascot
mm-hmm.
That really are needs that need to be shared by everybody.
Yes.
So some of those needs that the mascot takes on is just that ability to kind of not take ourselves so seriously.
Uh-huh.
That ability, human beings play as a basic need.
Yes.
And I'll always say to folks that I work with, we really need to look at what your work life is like and those relationships are like, because you spend the majority of your time at work.
Uh-huh. And work is not play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you're the mascot, but...
Work is not play, but there needs to be some element of that in
right.
there. So when we put all of that on a mascot, we have one person who's a drain on resources instead of everybody taking responsibility
mm-hmm.
for their need to play, for their need to relax, which when everybody's taking responsibility for that, we don't need someone that blows budgets. We don't need somebody who is always, you know, sticking their head in your office to say something inane at you to make you laugh or to
right.
waste your time or whatever that is. Everybody's doing enough of that along the way that it becomes this seamless part of how we work
mm-hmm.
instead of this big disruption.
Right.
Anything else we want to say on the mascot?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we've covered.
Okay, so in this episode, we've introduced the roles in the family and how people, adults in your workplace, are going to take those roles in.
Mm-hmm.
Those roles, again, they were the hero, the scapegoat, the people pleaser, the lost child, and the mascot.
Right.
We're going to have more in this series. If you're listening to this series through the Hidden Trauma Crash Course website, all of the episodes are on here, so we hope that you'll keep listening. If anything in here piqued your interest and you know that you need some help with this, reach out to us.
Right.
You can reach us at jackie.healingpaths@gmail.com. That's
healing paths with an S.
And a THS.
Yes, THS, not pass.
You can reach out to us there. We'll also have, when this is on our Hidden Trauma Crash Course website, there will be a contact form. We want to hear from you. We want to know how this impacted how you're showing up at work and how this sheds light. Hopefully it sheds light on some of the needs that you have in your workplace.
Right. And join us for our next episodes because we'll have some practical tips on what to do and how to address this in the workplace. Again, we're not going to go real deep dive into that, but we'll get you some practical tip in which you can start to test the waters
yeah.
in your workplace.
Some things to get you started. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist.
Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.